This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 21, Episode 10. This is Writing Excuses.
The cold open, voice.
Tools, not rules.
For writers, by writers. I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Lan.
I'm Erin, and I'm super excited to talk today about voice as a way to open a novel, a story, or whatever you're writing. We've been talking a little bit about the idea that there is a difference between an action-focused opening and a voice-focused opening. And of course, those are a spectrum, but if it is a spectrum, I prefer to be on the far voice side of things. So I'm interested to find out, why am I doing that and what am I gaining from it? Mary Robinette, you're the one who sort of introduced this like interesting balance that we're standing on. So what would you say a voice-driven opening has in it?
So I have to give credit that I became aware of the distinction from Donald Moss. I took one of his classes on openings, and he talked about this as the thing that is kind of one of the pieces that is hooking the reader and bringing them in. And an action-driven opening, it is, which we'll talk about in depth next week, it is, there's a character who's doing a thing and that pulls you into the story, an interest in what they're doing. But with a voice-driven opening, the thing that pulls you in initially is the sound, the cadence, the rhythm, all of those things for the voice. And these are like, most stories have both of these things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a voice and there is action. But there are some that are, that there's nothing happening. So I'm going to give you an example of a voice-driven opening, which I think most people will recognize. But in a voice-driven opening, it's a character who's ruminating about something. There's a thing that they are pondering, or and it's not always, the character can sometimes be the narrator.
Yeah.
And not someone who's going to appear in the story. But here's an example. Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 98 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose ape-descended life forms are so amazingly primitive that they still think digital watches are a pretty neat idea.
I'm just very amused by by your voice as you read this voice.
Well, I mean, like, I have tried to read this. I can read this in my normal voice, mm-hmm. But it calls out for that, among yeah. other things.
Well, I mean, that's part of the specificity of voice, is that you are hearing a voice mm-hmm. with it. You know?
Yeah. But there's nothing happening in this. There's absolutely no action. There's not even a character on this. So Don had a list of things that he thinks are the tools. I have modified it for myself. There's the aesthetic voice, like, you know, cadence, rhythm, tone, that kind of thing. Then there's the story questions, like, what do we want the readers to wonder about? And then a reason to care, like, why is this important? And it's not that the reader has to the reader doesn't need to understand why it's important yet. But it's important for the author to know. And then you usually want to try to get across genre during mm-hmm. that section. And so when you look at that opening again, you know, there's the story question of like, who is looking at us that thinks that we are primitive and that digital watches are not a pretty neat idea? I mean, mm-hmm. like, who is this person? It definitely sets up genre because this is, you know, we're clearly being viewed by someone who is not human. There's a definite aesthetic voice. And then the reason to care, why is this important? As we move into the story, we find out that it's really important because a Vogon constructor fleet is about to come yeah. through. So even though we don't necessarily know yet, when I see voice-driven openings fail, it's a lot of times less that it's voice-driven and more that the writer is trying to figure out what the story is. And so the thing that the character is ruminating about is something that will have no significance or bearing on the rest of the story. So there was no reason for us to invest in it at all.
Yeah, sort of the, as you were saying that, the way I was thinking about it is an interesting person thinking about an interesting thing for an interesting reason.
That's a great way to say it.
So it's like, if any of those three is not interesting, like their voice is very like monotonous for whatever reason, doesn't have a lot of rhythm and cadence. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the story question is like, should I eat peanut butter and jelly today? And the reason they're thinking about it is it's Tuesday. Like, unless they're about to get hit by a meteor 2 seconds after this happens, it's not really. I mean, you can have a like an aggressively boring voice, boring reason, like The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, I think. Isn't that the one that's about a guy who's like, he's living a really, really boring life and he just wishes his life was better. Yeah. And so some of the opening is like forcing you to live in his really like boring life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, as long as one of those three is interesting, or all three of those things are interesting, then it really works.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when we talk about voice-driven openings, it is that thing that I was talking about in an earlier episode about authority and control, mm-hmm. right? This is a place for you to really exert control over your reader in a certain way. And you're going to be like, no, slow down. We're going to look at this really simple, quiet thing. We're going to talk about why, you know, pocket or digital watches are a neat idea mm-hmm. and how silly that is, right? We're going to, you know, be in a particular perspective and experience something in a very controlled way at the pace that I want you to, right? Yeah. So if that is eating a peanut butter sandwich for some reason, then you have to make that interesting, right? You have to make that dynamic. And this is really relies on a lot of the prose tools that, mm-hmm. you know, we've learned around rhythm, musicality, word choice, sentence structure, all those things. You have to be interesting and engaging. And, you know, I think where a voice-driven opening can fall flat is, one, by being too flowery, right? Yeah. I think the failure mode of a voice-driven opening is what we call purple prose, mm-hmm. right? Of something that just goes so out of pocket, so deep off the one end of it that you're like, okay, this is just word salad. I don't know what's happening here. The good version of that uses all of the tools available to you. And the one that I think about the most is rhythm and musicality. I think what drives a voice-driven opening is that thing of it almost feels like a poem. It almost feels like a song. And that cadence is bringing you deeper into the story, even though no action is happening yet. And so I think that's one thing I want you to think about is think about epic poetry. Think mm-hmm. about, you know, how, you know, Homeric verse grabs you and pulls you in. Think about how, you know, Seamus Heaney grabs you and pulls you in his translation of Beowulf, right? Those kind of things are the things I think to really think about when you're like, how do I set up a long story using just the tools I have at my disposal for description?
Yeah, I'm really glad you said all of that, particularly mentioning purple prose, because I think the problem, it's the same problem on two different scales. The problem with purple prose is that people put in so much ornamentation into the language that you don't know where to focus. And when you have a voice-driven opening that is not about a specific thing, that the reader doesn't know where to focus or why they should be paying attention.
Yeah.
And so like the thing with the Hitchhiker's Guide is this is about Earth. Like that's, We start far out and we zoom in, but it is mm-hmm. just about Earth. It's not about anything else. It's not mm-hmm. about the Vogons coming in. It's not about any of those other things. It's just one thing that it's about. So I think that's one of the things that you can also think about is like, where do I want to put my reader's attention and why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also think like you talked about epic poetry, but I also think just songs. So music songs have to catch you really fast. They all, you know, a song is very hooky in the sense that like you don't have like 1,000 pages to get into that song. And so thinking about songs that you like, why is it that if you have a song that you're like, I really feel emotional whenever I listen to this particular song, what is it that it's doing? Now, there are certain tools we can't use because they're musical, but a lot of times you can see if the cadence speeds up, that's something that you can emulate. If they're using a particular rhythm, and I like to talk about sort of like the technical, like poetic terms. So like you have your iamb, which is like, if I'm remembering, like da-dum, 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 da-dum. And then you have like your trochee, which is the other way. Da-dum, 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 da-dum. In fact, when I was looking at examples of trochee somebody was saying that Taylor Swift uses them a lot. Nice to meet you, where you been? It's very like rhythmic, and then it changes. So it establishes a rhythm and then it changes.
Hmm.
When music swells, that could be you using more interesting words or having a story question that comes to the front because you can't swell the music, but you can swell the meaning.
Yeah.
And so thinking about what is a song doing to capture that rhythm and why, you know, not to say that your story can't be let the bodies hit the floor, but I think sometimes like with Purple Prose, it's like a really like a screamo, like, like that's a lot for 3 minutes. It's great for an entire book. That might be a lot. And maybe not everyone is your audience for that. So thinking about what can grab you and therefore how you can grab other people. And with that, we are going to take a short break.
People often ask me what I studied in order to become a web cartoonist. The answer is everything. And it's not just about becoming, it's about continuing. My education is ongoing, and Masterclass is a brand new part of that. I love the way Masterclass fits into my life. I have access to thousands of bite-sized lessons I can fit into my perpetually busy schedule. I can learn wherever I happen to be, my phone, my workstation, or even reclining in front of the television. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, my Masterclass offers unlimited access to over 200 classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. Put the power of habitual behaviors to work for you with Atomic Habits author James Clear. Learn how to tell a great story with Big Short and Moneyball author Michael Lewis. Apply CIA-tested tactics to everyday life with The Art of Intelligence. Right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/excuses. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/excuses. masterclass.com/excuses. I've talked about Quince a couple of times now, and I have an update. The cardigan I picked up over the holidays has pushed all my other sweaters and jackets right out of circulation. My Quince cardigan is making them all feel unloved. They can't compete. Premium fabrics, precision manufacturing, and polished design carry Quince above and beyond the rest of my closet. Seasons are changing, and Quince has an outstanding selection for the milder weather. Lightweight cashmere sweaters and polos, linen slacks and shorts, T-shirts in 100% Pima cotton and European jersey linen. But if I've learned just one thing from this Quince cardigan, it's that I don't need an entire closet full of options. I need a few choice, comfortable items that I'll wear and that make me look good when I'm wearing them. Right now, go to quince.com/WX for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to build your wardrobe and love it. And you will. Now available in Canada, too. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/WX for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/WX.
Do you live for Sunday dinner and that slow-cooked all-day flavor of a pot roast that falls apart with a dull spoon? Thanks to Omaha Steaks, I'm never shy about the proteins when it comes to Sunday dinners at our house. Every steak is aged to perfection to maximize tenderness and hand-cut by master butchers in America's heartland. Get 50% off the world's best everyday protein. Go to omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their semi-annual sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 off with promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to https://omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their semi-annual sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
I think right before we went to break, Dongwon, you looked like you had something to say.
Yeah, you know, one thing I was thinking about, and I think one of the uses of a voice-driven opening is a little bit filtering your reader. I think... One thing to think about with, you know, particularly a voice-driven opening is that some readers will bounce off.
Yeah.
There are readers who will pick this up and be like, this isn't for me. This isn't my kind of thing. And I would argue that's a very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do in the early pages of your book are communicate, this book isn't for everyone. this book is for you, dear reader. And if that reader's like, no, not me, this is for somebody else, they close and walk away, that's totally fine. You're trying to find your audience. And the way to find your audience is by being fully yourself in an engaging and interesting way. So a voice-driven thing is often communicating things about genre and tone and, you know, voice in a way that is specific enough that people will bounce off of it. So if you are out there taking your voice-driven opening to your crit group and half the group is being like, I don't get this, and half the group is like, I love this, then congratulations, I think you've done the thing, right? You don't need everyone to love that opening. You need some people to love that opening. But the people who it's for better really love it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think also the word filter is like one of the other things that a voice-driven opening does for you. Besides filtering out who your readers are, it also provides them a filter or a lens through which to view the book. It says, like, this is some of the framework that you should take coming into it. Like, coming in with the Hitchhiker's Guide thing, some of the framework that you're getting is, we are viewing this from the perspective of people who are more advanced technologically than we are. And everything that the character experiences is encountering people that think he's primitive.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the lens, that the filter that everything that happens in the story is. The other thing that I want to switch tangents just a little bit and talk about the fact that most books actually have both things happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And so, Aaron, you do a lot of this where you do actually have a character who's doing a thing in the beginning, but it's also very voicey. What are the kinds of things that you're thinking about when you're creating that?
I think I just don't. It is, again, like the interesting person doing an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Once you have created a voice of somebody that I find interesting, I'm less interested in the boring parts of their lives in some ways. And so I want them to be moving. I want them to be having to deal with something, because it's like, if you create a character and you like them, then you kind of want to throw things at them and see if they will catch them. Mm-hmm. And so their musings about life as a whole are less interesting to me. I'm also a big fan of starting a character not in media res, but in transition, at a point in which, I guess this is what the inciting incident does, at a point in which they are leaving something behind or something new is being introduced to them. So they have to, which is, when we're in transition, we often reflect more on where we came from, mm-hmm. and think about where we want to go at the same time, mm-hmm. which allows us to use time a little bit. Mm-hmm. It gives you a reason to flash back to something. It gives you a reason to anticipate something, but it's all through this particular character's voice as they're thinking about it. So I sort of cheat and give myself, like, what's a really cool situation that this person could be in? Okay, now let me see, like, what their voice wants to do and how I can bring it into the story.
I don't know that that's cheating so much as working smart.
Yeah. I think using time is one of the most important things you can do in the opening of a book, in terms of foreshadowing what's going to happen, reflecting on what just happened, thinking about the distant past, you know, all these things that you can do by rooting us in the perspective of a character, that you can play with time in really useful ways. And voice is how you, like, paper over those cracks. That's how you kind of, like, move us smoothly from point to point as you're jumping around in time, filling in those details. And you can use the voice, you can use that to sort of move us through the action in a way that, even if I don't entirely get, in a physical blocking way, what's exactly happening here, I'll roll with it if I'm enjoying the prose enough.
Yeah. And it, like, you just were making me flash back to the metaphor that we've been using about decorating a house.
Yeah.
Mm. So we've been using the word voice, and I should say that I think of it in, like, kind of three ways. There's the mechanical voice, like first person, third person, that kind of thing. What we're talking about here is specifically the aesthetic voice. And you can have, you know, a building can have rooms, and the rooms can be sterile, or if they have a strong aesthetic voice, they can totally transform. And so that's one of the things that you're doing when you're bringing in that aesthetic voice, is you are saying, okay, well, here's the structure stuff of what's happening, but this is how I want you to feel when you're inhabiting this space.
And you're, like, focused. Like, one of my very first studio apartments, I painted three of the walls a blood crimson red, and leaving one white accent wall.
It was a vibe.
And I think, like, but my, like, all my, like, decor and things, like, reinforced that this was happening. Mm-hmm. So I think when people came in, they were like, Murder Town. No, wait, it actually seems like this has a reason. So yeah. I think you can do things that are striking in a voice as long as it seems like you have control over them and you did them for a reason. And they're like, it seems like you're doing something on purpose.
Yeah.
Which is one thing that I like is to think about, you know, you control the voice doesn't control you. I think sometimes, and I do this too, like you almost want to talk about the voice, like it's just doing things, like it's run off with your story. And it can feel like that, but it's like you ultimately have control. You can change how the voice is. You can change how heavily you lean into it and try to create levels. Because I think the purple prose happens when you're so exaggerated the entire time, which is why I think it's always fun to go out and listen to people talk.
Yeah.
Even the people that you know who are like the most animated, the whatever, they have cadence. There are times they pull back in order to get you to lean in and then they get excited again. Mm-hmm. Most people have a lot that they're doing with their personal voice. You can listen to the way we use our voices on the podcast and think about what is it that we're doing? What's the difference between the way that each of us speak? How would we each be different as characters in a story?
It was funny. I clocked when I was talking about the rhythm thing that I started nodding my head in a specific rhythm and cadence. And then I started speaking along with that rhythm and cadence. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing it again right now. And like, it's unconscious, you know what I mean? And like, I think you're right. We all use voice in interesting dynamic ways as we talk. I mean, we all know someone who's a great storyteller and someone who's a terrible storyteller. That person who's a terrible storyteller is not really using their voice in dynamic and interesting ways. They're not framing it in that perspective. They're not making interesting language choices. And their rhythm is probably all over the place when they're trying to talk.
That also brings up a really great tool that people can use. When I'm learning how to do a new accent for audiobooks, one of the things that they'll often do is give you a movement to do with your body.
Mm-hmm.
In order to remind you of how it should, what you should be doing. So like when you're doing French, you draw your hand along and then you go up.
Oh.
And this is, so now I am very French. I am so sorry to everybody that is listening to me, but it is a thing you can do.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really cool trick. I like that.
And so it's a way, like it's a way to get an exaggerated form of the accent into your body. But I think that the writing version of that is the song, like putting music on that is the rhythms that you want to use. The other trick that I'll use to capture rhythms is sometimes I will look at a writer that has a very distinctive voice, like Rudyard Kipling's Just So Stories has a really distinctive aesthetic voice. And so I'll actually just key in a page of that to get those rhythms into my fingers before I start writing.
Yeah, I also like to listen, like watch like real people. And by that, I mean like some people on like Judge Judy or like, you know, a crime documentary, just because it's an interesting way to hear how different people speak. When I was in college, I took a class by somebody who was like a mentee of Anna Deavere Smith, who is an actress who does these one woman shows where she embodies all these different characters. And he talked about, how did you change your physicality? How do you change how clipped your speech is? How fast it is when you go up and when you go down? And I think all that stuff is just really, really fun to think about when you're writing, because when you read it, which is also why reading out loud is great, because when you read something out loud, a lot of times you can hear the rhythm and the cadence in a way that is sometimes difficult to hear it fully in your own head.
Yeah. And I think the thing to really keep in mind when it comes to voice is that it's best to use sparingly, like a seasoning, right? You can really overdo it. And so I think there are moments where you're going to want that dial turned all the way up, but don't sustain that for too long, right? I think it's really important to hit it right in the opening and then ease off of it and then pick it up again at like heightened moments. And I think where, again, we get into purple prose territory is when like Spinal Tap, you're at 11 and you stay at 11 the whole time.
And it's also something that you can use to for transitions.
Yeah.
Like, again, using audiobook narration, when I'm doing character voices, I hit the character voice hardest when I come into that character to make a distinction between characters. And then I can drop off because the reader's like, oh, okay. And they will intuit the voice in the rest of it. And so you can use that. You can hit it a little bit harder when you come into a new chapter or a new scene in a short story or heightened places, as you're saying. But it isn't something that you have to maintain all the time.
It's funny. I'm like, I don't know that I agree with that. Hit that voice hard. Beat it like it's Tulsa. No, but, but I think that, like, I think the problem you can come into is when the voice, like, obfuscates, it hides what's happening.
Yes.
In the same way that, like, world building can get in the way of the story. If, like, every animal has, like, is like a gleep glop instead of a cat, at a certain point, like, you need some sort of, like, you know, you don't even know, like, is this four legs? Like, the gleep glop had four clicker clackers. At a certain point, you cannot understand what is happening. They're laughing over here. You can't understand what's happening.
I don't know why you're trying to pretend that you can't. You're not laughing. Like
the Glee Club had four ticker tockers.
There were flicker flockers.
Flicker flockers.
Oh, flicker flockers. Oh, I'm so okay, sorry. The ticker tockers are what the gloop flops.
Wow.
All right. All right.
Anyway, so
an example of how it can overwhelm.
You hear what I'm saying, which is that voice can do that too, where you get so into the voice and the way somebody would say something that you lose the plot of what it is they're saying, and so does your reader.
As we just lost the plot.
Which goes back to this being a spectrum. So it's about what is driving the moment. Whether it's what's driving it is the voice. And I think you can obscure the meaning, but there's also the, you can forget to have any action happening.
Yeah.
And so there are some moments where you're going to want action to be the driver. And there's some moments where you want the voice to be a driver, but it's not that when the action is driving that the voice isn't there. It's just, it's not the thing that's propelling the scene in that moment.
Yeah, in fact, and then I'll take us to the homework. I think one of the reasons to have action is the more action that's happening, I think even in our own lives, the less voicey we become. Like even your most poetic friend, like if being attacked by like a pack of wolves, probably isn't going to be like, their fur like glints off the moonlight. They're going to be like, oh crap, wolves, run. Like, and so I think it like allows you to distill down to what is happening and gives you a break. And then once you reach safety, you can reflect on how beautiful the wolves looked as they tried to tear your throat out.
Amazing.
And with that, I will take us to the homework. And your homework is not to put the gleep glop. That's bonus homework. but the actual homework is to take three voices that you can, that you know well or can know well. One way to think about this is a celebrity that you do a good caricature of, that you think of that has a really distinct voice. Someone you know well who's like an interesting storyteller. Does anybody that you think like I really understand their voice and can get it in my head? And then write something very basic like that person goes to the grocery store and buys eggs in all three of those voices and see what changes in the way in which you tell that story.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. Your hosts for this episode were Mary Robinette Kowal, Don Juan Song, and Aaron Roberts.
This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.